Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. Colson Whitehead has won just about every literary accolade there is for the Underground Railroad. The Pulitzer Prize, the Carnegie Medal, and the National Book Award are but three. The book is also a New York Times bestseller, and it's being translated into 40 languages.
The novel tells the story of Cora, a slave on a Georgia cotton plantation somewhere in the 1850s, and her desperate attempt to escape to freedom. It pulls no punches about the brutal reality of slavery in the antebellum South, nor does it sugarcoat the less obvious but equally repellent bigotry of the North. Yet despite the subject matter, the book is hopeful, and the character of Cora is utterly compelling.
Colson Whitehead will speak at the UWM Student Union Wednesday evening. He has said the Underground Railroad was the book that scared him to write, so when I reached him by phone, I wanted to know why.
I first had the idea way back in the spring of the year 2000. And I was finishing up a novel and came across a reference to the Underground Railroad and thought, what kind of weird story could I generate if I made this metaphor into a literal train? And it just seemed, I was 30 years old. I was hanging out till like 4 a.m. most nights. And it seemed I wasn't a good enough writer, I think, to pull it off. I just felt I didn't have the kind of chops in terms of technique to pull off a story with its sort of structural gambits. And I think I was mature enough to write a book about slavery at that age and deal with the subject in the way it deserved to be treated. As the years went on, I'd finish a book and think, am I ready? And the answer was always no. And then, at a certain point, it just seemed I'd been putting it off for so long that I had to address why I was putting it off and sort of face the book I was avoiding.
There are such huge themes here. Obviously, slavery, and the fact that this brutality, that this crack in the foundation of this country is kind of what founded it. And I found as I was reading it that I felt very complicit in that, in somehow not acknowledging, even though I know it's happened, but somehow not owning it. And I found the book made me live it in a way that, as a white person, I don't live it.
Well, I think everyone sort of relates to the story of slavery in different ways. I think that it's not really taught very deeply in elementary school or high school. At least that was my experience. And from traveling is what I get from people who come out to hear me read. And so we'd rather talk about Abraham Lincoln and not slavery. We'd rather talk about Martin Luther King and not segregation. And so when a book like this comes along, and it is very, I think, vivid in how it describes the violence of how slaves were kept in chains. They didn't use harsh language to keep millions of people in bondage. They raped, torture, dehumanize millions of people to prevent them from running away and rising up. And it was obviously incredibly brutal. And so if you haven't contemplated or confronted the material facts of slavery in a while, the book is surprising. And I'm not sure about complicity, but if you're descended from slave owners, you have to reckon with the fact that the family farm was paid for by the blood of enslaved people, and that the portrait of your great-great-great-great-grandpa or grandma, who was so beloved, was not necessarily not a nice person.
Did you find that it was difficult for yourself, as you were researching this and writing this, to actually look at the brutality of it?
I think, like a lot of kids, my introduction to slavery was Roots when I was like 8 years old. And then, I studied history in college. But, but coming to the material and diving so deeply in as a grown-up, I have kids, and then you understand, with a more adult understanding, the real seriousness of the situation, the terrible devastation, what it'd be like to see your child beaten, sold off, vice versa. And then, I came into the book, I was not writing, I was outlining and coming up with the characters, and I realized just how much I'd have to put Cora through just to be realistic, and the supporting cast, how much brutality, and also just the fact that it's a miracle I'm here. At any point, my ancestors could have died in this or that moment in the middle of passage on the plantation. And it's just luck that, they lived to have children and their children had children.
I think about Cora. She's such a powerful character. And she was somebody that was, obviously shaped by everything that she went through, but somehow manages to transcend as well, even when she, you know, she sort of realizes at times that she thinks she's free and she's not. And her journey is such an important one.
Well, I mean, you know, we're talking about people today contemplating what happened 200 years ago, 150 years ago. You know, part of writing the book is trying to figure out what kind of personality would survive slavery, be able to have the capacity for hope that there's a place of refuge in the North, and then have the courage to flee the plantation. And, you know, we're getting our food at Whole Foods and having our nice 21st century lives. How do we contemplate, you know, the kind of personality that can do what Cora takes on in the book? And so part of the undertaking is figuring out a character who can survive and also be hopeful in a way that's very unlikely for someone in her circumstance.
Yes, the book does end on a hopeful note. And I found that it was almost a balm at the end of, you know, everything that the characters have gone through and all of the setbacks and all of the difficulties, just the horrors that they've survived, that you leave us with just a little bit, you know, that there's this possibility that something good could happen.
And that's the hope that sort of, you know, keeps her going through the book. The improbable idea that there's a place of safety and refuge. And, you know, and strangely, my book before this was about, novel before this was about a zombie apocalypse and one of the survivors trying to find the last human settlement. And so they're both very different. One is a post-apocalyptic horror novel, and then there's this one. But they're both, you know, strangely animated by this hope that there's a place you can go and be whole and safe in the devastation.
Do you find that as you've been going around the country reading and getting reactions from people who've read the book and have come to the readings, do you get a racial divide in the reactions?
Well, it sort of depends. I mean, I think in the South, you know, I wasn't sure how the South would respond. I'd never been invited to read that extensively in the South. And it's really been embraced in certain places like North Carolina and Georgia. I've gone to like North Carolina 6 times for college visits or libraries or bookstores since the book has come out. Then I haven't been to Alabama. So what does that mean? You know, is there a new South that is ready to reconcile and sort of contemplate its history? And are there sections that are not so up to the task? I mean, I think in terms of reaction, I found it really interesting in Europe. You know, it's been much more successful than my previous books in different countries. And those two things. One is that, say, in France or Poland, where there was a French resistance against the Nazis, they connected their resistance to the Underground Railroad workers, you know, people getting folks to safety, subverting this oppressive regime. And so even though it is about American slavery in a very specific sort of way, it is open to a lot of different countries' interpretation in terms of, say, World War II, but also just that dynamic between the oppressors and the oppressed, whether you see it as royalty versus peasants, slave masters versus slaves, the rich against, you know, serfs, royalty against serfs. And so that power dynamic has translated in a way that I didn't expect when I was writing it.
Well, and of course, we're kind of talking around the construct that you have here of the literal Underground Railroad, that in this world, the Underground Railroad that we learned about in school is actually made manifest. There are stops and tracks and trains, and they literally run underneath, you know, they're in the substructure of the country. And I love that touch of magic realism.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the book comes out of that proposition of making the Underground Railroad into a literal train. And so from its very conception, it's a fantastic book. And once Cora does escape the plantation and goes on her first train ride, we enter into an alternative America. And each state that she goes through, whether it's South Carolina, North Carolina, has its own different sort of alternative America that it's presenting. And it enables, you know, the book to do what it does, I think, in this sort of compelling way, which is not tell what actually happened, but propose an alternative history, an alternative conversation about how the country came to be.
I was also struck as she was stopping off in different places. She was in South Carolina first, then North Carolina, then Indiana, and then going west, that it felt almost Homerian you know, that you were having Odysseus trying to return home, in this case, Cora trying to find home, trying to find safety, and being seduced along the way by things that looked good but ended up not being.
Sure. I mean, you know, I guess when I had the book in the back of my head for many years, I would tell my friends what was it about and the structure, and they'd say, oh, that sounds really stupid, Coulson. And then I start saying Gulliver's Travels, and they're like, oh, so it's a different island. Each state's like a different island. But that structure, you know, does go back to the Odyssey, you know, where a hero is tested in a series of allegorical adventures, and you sort of solve one problem, confront one problem, go on to the next chapter, and there's a whole new sort of system. And that's definitely what confronts Cora, you know, the sort of ancient structure of storytelling. She figures out what's great about South Carolina, what's wrong, and then goes to the next adventure.
And sort of escapes. I mean, in each case, she escapes those particular bonds. How has it felt? I mean, you won all kinds of accolades for this. You've gotten the Pulitzer, the National Book Award. How does it affect the writing you're doing now?
Sure. I mean, well, you know, it's always pretty hard. And so it's not as if, you know, obviously the book is very successful. Does it make the next one easier? No, you know, it's all, you know, pretty difficult work. Do I feel pressure from other people's expectations?
Or your own expectations?
Yeah, I mean, I'm already pretty tough on myself. I don't have to amp it up, you know, for the next one. And so whether, you know, it was 8 books ago when I was broke and didn't know if I could write, or now and I have to, you know, come up with an idea, a compelling story after gaining a you know, much bigger readership. It's always sort of, there's always some sort of weird problem that is bugging you. And so if it's not this, it's that. So, you know, again, you know, 8 books in, I never sort of thought I'd have a book that took off like this. And it's very surprising and unlikely and very lovely. And it's hard to be in my usual depressive mood, I'm sad to say.
I have to find your way back to
that.
Yeah, for the next book. Do you ever envision at this point revisiting Cora or picking up her story, or is this sort of a complete tale in and of itself?
It's pretty much done for me. I can't think of what else I have to say about her or what else there is to add to her journey. You know, I always do a lot of outlining before I start, and I have to know the destination before I start writing. And so where she ends up is where I wanted to put her, you know, for so many years. And maybe I didn't know if it was Missouri or Canada or New York or Massachusetts, but that sort of emotional place that we leave her at is what made the most sense to me and what I was writing to the whole time.
Yeah, it feels, as a reader, I have to say, it feels very complete. You know, I kind of know on some level what happens to her after that, after the last page of the book. I kind of know somehow, you know, things will be okay in some form. Finding, as we've talked about earlier, you know, finding that hope in all of that despair.
Well, you know, she's off the plantation. Where she actually ends up, you know, is unclear finally at the end. But even if she goes to, say, San Francisco, and it's a great city, she finds someone to love, and she wins a lottery, and is like a multimillionaire, she's still a black woman in 1850s America, which is a very racist place. And so, you know, there are gradations of freedom available to all of us, not just Cora. And, you know, no matter where she ends up, there's still a reality of the country and the time that she's living in.
Do you feel that we are in a place now that too closely harkens back to what was going on? I mean, we don't have literal slavery anymore, but we have some pretty ugly racist things going on.
No, yeah. I mean, we have a white supremacist president who's embracing all the sort of worst impulses and sort of terrible energies that have caused so much sort of pain over the centuries. And so I think we are in a sort of terrible place, in a very precarious place. We have to hope that we pull out of it. But it is, you know, it's hard to open the news every day and sort of see how the latest permutation of a daily horror that you have to confront when you get up every morning.
Do you think that the United States will ever heal? I mean, again, we were founded on genocide and slavery. And it seems like a very big wound to heal.
I'm not sure about healing, but I think if we can learn, I think if we actually teach slavery, if we teach the dispossession of Native Americans properly and deeply and thoroughly in school, and I think we sort of curb our sort of worst impulses, we get further away, and maybe that's healing. But I think if we, instead of, you know, sort of running away and avoiding all these different episodes in our history and you know, and taught them to, you know, to children, I think we move on, if not heal. I mean, I've met people who, in the last year and a half, who still thought the Underground Railroad was a train. Like, when we're kids, we think that, you know, and then we hopefully a teacher tells us how it actually worked. But there are people who are like, oh, actually, I thought it was a real train all these years, and people in the 30s and 40s. And so I think that says that we have a long way to go before we're actually teaching our history in a proper way.
Well, we are so looking forward to having you here to talk about the Underground Railroad and to talk about writing and all of that. Colson Whitehead, it has been such a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to coming in a couple days.
Colson Whitehead is the author of the prize-winning and best-selling novel, The Underground Railroad. He'll be in Milwaukee tomorrow evening to speak at the UWM Student Union.